Please welcome Mr. John Hernandez. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here tonight. If I'm a little bit nervous, I'm not used to speaking in front of people. Some years ago, well, I guess me, like everyone else, had a lot of questions about life and about different experiences that we go through. My father reminded me, he's with me here, and he's way up in his 80s, that the entire family had what he calls premonitions all of our life, and it went back several generations, and whether that led to this or not, I don't know. Some years ago, I was married, and I was, in 1971, I went to work for the United States Forest Service, and part of my assignment was that I fought forest fires in different parts of the country. And this one time we got an assignment, and before I get into it, I'll just say this here, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but people ask me what was my background as far as religion goes, and the family is very diverse. We've had Baptist, we've had LDS or Mormon, we've had Presbyterian, Seventh-day Adventist, Catholic, just about as diverse as different religions within the family. This one day I got a call from my boss and telling me that they'd had a large fire down in a wilderness area, and so they were assembling the crew together, and I was a member of what they call a hotshot crew, and that's an elite firefighting crew. When I had this call, we had maybe a couple of hours or maybe 3 or 4 hours to get together to where the base was going to be, and then we were going to be flown out to where this fire was, and I felt very uneasy. I was not the typical of hugging your wife and kissing her goodbye and telling the kids goodbye. It just was very uneasy, and it's hard to describe. And I kept looking back, and I kept thinking, I'm not going to come back, but no reason for it. I just was a gut-down feeling. And so the crew was assembled, and we went down to where they have the base camp, and there was decisions made to put us on a helicopter and fly us in to where this particular fire was. And normally when we fight fire, we go from the bottom to the top. In this case, we went from the top to the bottom, and everyone felt that the wind was okay and everything was safe and that we could build our fire line down into where the fire was. And the hill was probably as steep as what these mountains were out here. And we got about halfway down, and the crew was made up of all different type of people. There was women, there was Latin Americans, there was Native Americans, there were atheists on the crew, there was people of all walks of life. And by that, some folks on the weekends or when we were off drank more than their wages provided them. And so it was a diverse group of people. Well, as we went down and we got about halfway down, there was two crews and approximately 40, a little over maybe 45 people. The wind changed, and when the wind changed, then you're in chaos. Our wildland firefighting crews carry a little pack on their back, and we call it shake and bake. And basically it's like a TV dinner type of thing, and it's your last resort. You're either going to live or you're going to die. And when you're in a situation like that, adrenaline is running and people are scared, and it's just total chaos. And you have a matter of minutes to decide whether you're going to deplore, which means that you try to scrape out the material and pull your pack out and get in it, and then you just hope that you're going to live, or else you try to go back to a safe zone, and you have safety zones set up. Well, the decision was made to go back to the safety zone. But as you can imagine, climbing a hill like this or try to run it, and then you have a fire behind you type of thing. And one of the things I learned right away was that the fire isn't what was going to kill you. It was a lack of oxygen. The fire was burning so intensely that it took all the oxygen away from people. And I got to where I didn't realize that I had fallen, but I had apparently fallen down, and I was crawling literally on my hands and knees. And then all of a sudden everything was peaceful, and I no longer experienced the trauma that was going on, or the heat or the wind or trees falling or anything like that. And I looked around, like looking at this group right here, and I noticed people were standing up, and they were in bewilderment as well, and were looking around. And there was one person that was on the crew, I'll call his name Lloyd, that limped. He had a birth defect in one of his legs. And I noticed as he walked that he was perfect. There was nothing wrong with him. His limp or his birth defect was gone. And I spoke to him and I said, Lloyd, look at your foot. And he looked down and his foot was perfect, as much as what you can ever say perfect was. The other thing I started to notice, that there was a bright light. I've never been able to compare or to describe what this light is. But if you've ever seen sun on a snow-lit field and how blinding it is to your eyes, and you have to have like sunglasses, this was brighter, but it didn't hurt you. It was warming, it felt good, it was pleasant. About this time in the distance, like I'm looking out through the windows, I could see somebody coming toward me. I felt that I needed to approach this individual, and I approached this individual, and it turned out that it was my great-grandfather, who I had lived with until I was 9 years old. And then he had a massive heart attack as our house had burned down. He explained to me that I was in the spirit world, with better use of words, and I was still in confusion, and I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, turn around. I turned around, and I looked, and my physical body was laying down amongst about, maybe 10 or 15 other folks that I glanced at. And I said, what does this mean? Does this mean that I'm dead? And he said, that term we don't use here, that it's you've passed on, you've gone beyond the veil, and that was explained to me. And he said, I'm here to act as a guide for you and to show you different experiences. Our communication wasn't like I'm verbally communicating to you. It was like mental telepathy. As fast as I could think of a thought or a thing, I had answers received back again. If we think of our computers nowadays running the way they run and we get messages instantly back, I could compare it to something like that. And he said, all of your life you've had different questions, and today we're going to try and answer these questions for you. Now, people have asked me, and I can't answer this question, what the time frame was. I don't know how to explain it, because you're not aware of any time. Time seems to stop when you're on the other side. I could have been laying, or my body could have been there for 10 or 15 minutes. It could have been there for an hour. I just have no way of putting down any kind of a time frame. So the first question that came to my mind, that's always kind of plagued me when I've gone to funerals and things, is, do people on the other side weep, or are they sad, or are they missing the folks that are on this side like we suffer or we miss them, our loved ones? And I was told no, that it's like me right now. I've left my family and I've been gone for 4 days, but though I miss them, I'm not crying or I'm not so emotional. And they're the same way, that the time frame between where heaven is, or hell, or whatever you want to call it, is so different than here, that 1 minute there would be like 100 years here or 10 years here, or there's just a huge time frame, so that folks that have passed away don't mourn or don't feel bad about the folks that they've left behind. The next thing that was explained to me was that it was important that I understand that at a funeral, the last thing that we do on this earth is to watch where our physical bodies are placed. And most of the time, for all of us, it's in a cemetery, but they're there actually at the funeral, and they're watching people, and they're emotional, and they feel sad that people are dramatic over their passing. There's nothing that they can do about it, but they watch where their bodies are placed, and then they go on to what I call different levels or different places or paradise or things as such like that. The next two things that came to my mind was that instantly when we pass away, there's a partial judgment. And I saw people that in my mindset were not good people. They were bad, or they had done bad things here. And at the same time, I saw people that were good people, and there was two different kinds of spirits, if you want to call it that. And there were bad spirits or evil spirits that took people into what I would call outer darkness. And there was other spirits that were waiting. I think, well, I know that everyone here has a, I guess we'd call it a guardian angel, or somebody assigned to them to meet them and to guide them. Just like me here the last 2 or 3 days, I've had to have a guardian angel to get me around Salt Lake, and I just don't know how to go off the roads or to do anything type of thing. And if it hadn't been for my cell phone, I couldn't have gotten anywhere. And that was the purpose of my grandfather. He'd really be a great grandfather of being there and to guide me and to help me out. One of the questions that I asked, I attribute this to my background, my different religious backgrounds, was what happens to a small child when they die and they're only, you know, just barely born, or they die in birth, or they're 4 or 5 years old, or they're young type of thing. Do they go to this evil world? And I was standing here, and it's like looking at this aisle. And on one side, it was peaceful and nice, and the other side, it was evil and hurtful. And it was told to me that, no, that this is not the case. That children that are born and we lose them, or they die immediately, or for whatever reasons, are special spirits that didn't need to have experiences like you and I have, or to live 20 or 30 years, or 80 years, or 90 years. They go directly back to our Heavenly Father, and there's no judgment of these type of people. And the next thing I began, as we seemed like we were walking, and by walking, it's hard to explain, but as I thought in my head, as an example, I want to be in England. I was there automatically. Or if I wanted to be in Colorado, I was there automatically. As I looked around, I saw beautiful mountains, I saw water, I saw streams, I saw people building buildings, I saw people courting, I saw all different kinds of activities going on, except that here I always have a feeling of locking my vehicle or being careful about society or about what's going on. And there it was just an overwhelming feeling that everything was okay, that it was peaceful, and that I didn't have to worry. There was a couple that lived next door to us, and I've known them all my life. The gentleman was 94, 95, and he passed away. And within a month's time, the lady passed away. I couldn't understand why, because she was in good physical health. There was no cancer. There was nothing wrong with her. I saw them there, and I asked her, "Why did you pass away so soon?" And she said, and his name was Jack and her name is Annie, and she said, it was Jack and myself had made this pact with God, or with our Heavenly Father, that we wouldn't be separated very long, that we would go together. And so she said, when Jack passed away, this pact was kept, and it was my time to go and be with him, and now we're together. I always wondered why or how things were circumstance. Why was I born here in America? Why was I born to a Latino / Anglo family, or different circumstances? I was able to view what I call the pre-existence. And I saw children and I saw people there negotiating what was going to be their life here on this earth. And they were going to be able to choose different experiences that they were going to have. As an example, I saw couples that promised each other they would find each other here on this earth here. And to me, it's, how do I put this, Sometimes, and I don't know whether any of you have had this experience or not, but sometimes you just look at a person or you hold their hand or whatever, and you know that you've seen them before, and things just click. And beyond, but any other people, you don't recognize, you don't see. I compare it maybe to that movie, that Sleepless in Seattle. And the guy looks at her, and for some reason, it's just, things just click. I saw that happening, and I saw people making that kind of promises. I saw parents that were going to be parents united with their families. And there was five or six or one or two, and they were going to be bringing down, these were going to be their offspring. And these people had chosen to come down through their lineage because of the experience that they were going to have between this woman and this man. And they wanted to have this experience, and it's, I compare it kind of like to go to the University of Utah versus Utah State or to BYU. Each one of those schools, you'd have a different experience than you would with, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Other folks, it was told to them that they were going to be born into bodies like Down syndrome or abusive situations, or nothing was happenstance, nothing was the flip of the coin. Nobody was forced. They were given that choice, and they chose that for whatever reasons to help them in whatever goals or whatever way of life that they have chosen. And they accepted that. They accepted where they were going to go and how they were going to go. The next thing that was explained to me was, in this life, it isn't circumstance or it isn't, God is in charge. And when I say God, I'm talking about the Trinity. They're in charge and they have a plan for the entire earth. And it's not just circumstance that we're born here with cell phones and computers and that type of thing. And other folks back in, say, like Brigham Young's time didn't have these things. These people were brought here knowing full well that they were going to develop cell phones with the knowledge, and they were going to develop computers, and they were going to develop whatever inventions that are brought forward, and it's the right time and the right place for these different inventions and technology to come forth in all different fields. I saw people that I would describe as being doctors. Same thing there. They had learned things, and it was the right time for them to come to this earth. Another thing that I experienced was language. As I sit on the crew, at first we were together, and then we diversed, and I didn't see them. What impressed me was there was a lot of people, and they spoke a lot of different languages, but I understood every single language that was being said, even though it was being spoken in Native American tongues or in Spanish or in English or whatever it was, and nobody had a problem with communication. Everybody understood clearly, and nobody was there interpreting. It was just completely clear. I don't know how to, some of these things are kind of hard to explain to you. The next thing, and maybe you think it's funny, I don't know, but it was with me, I always wondered about my pets. I've always been somebody that's been born and raised and has always had dogs and cats and horses and different things. And I always wondered about this kind of thing. And I saw many of my pets that had passed away that were there. They were called, you know, by name, and they couldn't talk to me. Maybe they talked to me. They wouldn't like some of the ways I treated them or something. But anyway, at least they responded by the name. And so I was able to witness that they were these type of pets and this type of thing. Then my grandfather told me it was not my time. I said, what do you mean? And he showed me here part of the preexistence, which I now apologize, but I thought was kind of dumb at the time. But anyway, he said, you have one more spirit to bring down. My kids were all 7, 8, 9, 10, they were all kind of a little bit up in age, and my wife had her tubes tied, and I thought, where is this coming from? You know, this can't happen type of thing. He said, it's your choice. He said, nothing here is forced upon anybody or anything. It's your choice. If you want to go back, you can. If you want to stay, you can. But I'm telling you, it's not your time. And I said, well, I said, I'm a real coward. I'm a real weak person. I don't want to go back to a body that's all burned up and scarred up, and I can't handle that. And he said, well, that God was going to show his power over the elements by using myself and the crew. And he said, the crew doesn't have a guarantee. There may be members on your crew that choose to stay here because that's their free agency. Or there may be members that choose to go back with you. There's no guarantees of anything. But you will be shown that God has power over everything, and your body will be perfect. There will be nothing wrong with your body. When I did decide, obviously, to come back into my body, this part is extremely hard to explain. It was the most painful thing that I've ever had in this life. I've had horrible accidents. I had a horrible horse accident, and I've had my hips completely shattered and a hole punched into my stomach and things, and I've been through excruciating pain, but nothing described the pain that I had of going back into my body and being restricted. And here we think that we can get on an airplane and we think we have a lot of mobility, but there it's very fast. There's no comparison, and then there's nothing wrong. And I always like this part of it the best of anything, because in my particular case, I'm going to have a full head of hair. And so the other thing, when I saw him the first time, I said, I always called him Dad, even though he was my grandfather. And I said, Dad, I don't recognize you. And I don't know who you are. And he said, watch me. And he changed his appearance to a person that was in their 90s. And when I first saw him, he was in his 30s, 20s and 30s, in what we would call the prime of our life. And I saw babies that had died, and they had a full-grown body inside of them. I was led to believe that this is why they cry so much, is that they have a full-grown body inside a little tiny body that we have here on Earth, and they're little trying to communicate that they're a little cramped in there. And then the other thing was that came that we would have a perfect body. There would be no, if we had cancer or if we had a birth defect or if we had anything, there would be nothing wrong with that, that our bodies would be restored. However, I saw people that were craving, that had been addicted here. They were craving cigarettes. They were craving drugs. They were craving booze. They were craving things that they had been addicted to here, and they couldn't get there, and they were going through immense withdrawal systems. And then it was showed to me that not only are they going through that suffering with their spirit out of their body, they're now going to go through it twice, because when they pick up their body and their natural body is going to want these same cravings, and they're going to suffer it again. Obviously that we should use our own common sense and not become addicted to things, whatever it may be. When I came back into my body, the fire was still going, and it was led to me to believe to get up and to walk to the top of this mountain hill, and that everything would be fine. And I noticed the tools and the things that we had were completely gone. They were melted. We had power saws, we had axes, we had shovels. They were all melted, and the handles were all burned. When we got to the top of the hill, everything came back in. Just as normal could be. But the amazing part about that was that everybody in the room, without anybody saying anything, fell down on their knees and were praying in their own way. And by their own way, I mean some were crossing themselves, some were with, well, whatever religious realm, or but they were praying, they were worshiping, they were thankful. People asked, did we ever converse? I personally was afraid to ask anybody or to say anything about this experience that I had just been through. Many of the people on the crew were the same way. Now, there were some people that were atheists, some were Catholics, some were whatever, and they had to deal with their own experience the only way they had. 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I ran into one of the crew leaders, and we were talking about this and kind of easing into it type of thing. And he told me that my tent mate, and by that we have these little pup tents that we live in, and he said that my tent mate had committed suicide, that he turned to being a complete alcoholic and he couldn't handle it. I know within myself it put an immense strain on my family and on my wife and on my religious church and different members. It's extremely hard to live with. When I was there, I knew that I was okay and that I was going to make it to heaven, but I was scared to come back here, that maybe I was going to make a big mistake and then wasn't going to be able to go back. And that was more scary than what you can understand. Since that time, I've had two other instances, not as dramatic or as big, but one of them was a life-threatening situation that I was, I'll tell you just briefly about. If anybody's been between Price and Moab, you know what that kind of country is like. Well, I have a ranch there, not in there, but I mean in Scimitar. And I've visited it maybe 100, 200 times, and you never see anybody. It's just wide open. My son and I were gathering cattle, and the horse blew up, and it drove the saddle horn up inside of me. And it busted my complete hips, and I still have scars here. And it poked a hole in my stomach, and I didn't realize it at the time. I was paraplegic, and as I came off, I hit my head on a rock. That rendered a lot of my memory, and so my body was bent forward and backward. I told him that we didn't have a cell phone or anything then, and told him he had to go for help. Well, at that time, this same grandfather and my grandfather, they're both, one's great-grandfather and one's a grandfather, were there with me, and my great-grandfather said, "Kid, I'm here to take care of you." And my grandfather said, "I'm going to go with," his name is James, and he calls him son. Within 5 to 10 minutes, they found a doctor and a registered nurse out of Denver Hospital that were there camped, and were able to bring them and give me help. And they went into the town, and the ambulance wasn't able to help me, and they flew me into the hospital where I had to have an emergency surgery, and I had to have blood transfusions and that type of thing. Through all of these different experiences, I have been led to believe that God lives, and our Heavenly Father lives, and the Holy Ghost lives, and that there's a purpose to this life. And they give people these experiences as testimony that they're still alive. And if anybody doubts that they're still alive, we're here to try to testify and to give all glory and all knowledge to them. It's not that I'm big-headed or that I'm special or anything like that. I have tried very hard to remain very private and not, people ask me if you publish books or anything like that. I don't want any of that kind of thing. It's something that I trusted Arvin Gibson and I trusted Sandy Cherry, and I went ahead and did it. And this time around, I was asked to speak at a radio program, and I went ahead and was like a turtle coming out of his shell and did that. But I'm in hopes that through what I'm saying to you here today, it might ease some of your pain or your questions or your feelings or help people a little bit. And it wouldn't be fair for me to go through my entire life and not try to help, as we would know, brothers and sisters type of thing. Thank you.
My question would be, when you talked about the pain of reentering, can you clarify, was that a physical pain? Was it an emotional, intellectual, all of the above? What do you meant by the returning? You chose to come back. Your body was fine, but the painful experience of reentering. Did I understand that right?
Yes, that's correct. Part of it was that you were so restricted. When you've passed over, you don't have any restrictions. You're free to live life, to think life, to go and do what you want, and there's no physical restrictions given to you at all. And here, I can't walk through a wall, or I can't, I feel cold, I feel warmth, I feel different things, and there it wasn't that way at all. And then I felt that I was going to be cramped back into a box again, or I don't know how to describe it, but I felt physical pain, like if I cut off your finger or something like that. Part of it was mental, because I thought, oh, now I'm going to be restricted again. And then part of it was physical pain, because I felt that I'm back in my body with all of its, well, where I limp or any imperfections that I had, and I'm putting a perfect spirit back into an imperfect body. And that's why it was pain, both spiritual, both mental, and both physical.
In one of the accounts in Arvin's book, you said there were things that you had learned that you weren't ready to talk about, and I wonder if you still feel that way, or are there things that you'd expand on today that you weren't ready to in those days?
Yeah, some things I can't understand. And beyond being able to explain why things were going to happen or why I at length, and I wish Arvin was still here, I sat down with him and I explained to him that there were things that were going to happen that were out of our control, and they're still going to happen, and they're out of our control. Things that are beyond all of our imagination. And I don't mean to scare anybody by any means at all, and I'm not a foreseer or anything like that at all. But we need to be careful. How do I put it without bringing this into a political realm? Elections have consequences, and we need to be careful. There's just things that in this world, there's not good people, there's evil people, and things can happen that are going to affect us. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to have to happen, but it does mean that it can happen. And there is two sides to everything. And we're here living in the world that we live in so that we have that experience of both good and evil. But it was definitely showed to me that, as I said, that there was a partial judgment when you pass away immediately and you have no court to go to, wait a minute, I did this because of that. That didn't happen. You know within yourself, yes, I was doing 80 miles an hour in a 15-mile-an-hour zone, and there's no denying it. And those folks were separated, and they knew they had whatever judgments were coming to them, given to them.
About the children who had died, the babies. So in the spirit world, were they babies, or did they morph into adults, or could they be babies and then adults, or how does that work?
They were, in my impression, full-grown spirits like you and I. But they came down into a body like a baby. And if they died here on earth as a baby, you would see them as they came out as a full-grown person. If they were 1 month or 2 months old, they would look like they were 25 or 30 years old. They changed, not morph, but they changed their appearance so that you could recognize them. If I saw you now when you were 90 or 100 years old, and I died and saw you there, and the last thing I saw was when you were in the grave, I wouldn't recognize you the way you are right now. And in order for you and me to recognize our ancestors and the people that we love, they were able to change back to the body that was a 25 or 30 year old. But when you're living there, you're in a body that's 25, 30 years old.
So were you in a body that was 25 or 30 years old?
Yes, and the interesting part was I was in my firefighting clothes. I didn't wear a white robe or anything like that. There was clothes just like we have here, different colors, different things. I saw soldiers that were in uniform. I saw police officers. I saw other folks that were in different clothes and that type of thing. Part of that is almost a lie to you because I was already 25, 30 years old, and so I didn't really change. I didn't have the gray hair or the lack of hair that I did then.
You were here 3 or 4 years ago and told your story. I was here then also. And if I remember correctly, you said that after this experience, you left the Denver area of the fire, you went back home, and you were a little reluctant for some time, a few months maybe, to tell your wife. that you had met your grandfather and that you had been to heaven. She didn't understand you and she didn't believe you, and maybe in 2 or 3 years you separated. Did she ever believe you?
Not only her, but other church members that I went to. I tried 2 different churches. I would be there in bed with her, and I would be like having flashbacks, be thinking about things, and it was on my mind all the time. And I would try to talk to her and try to explain to her, well, this is what happened. And she'd say, well, I just think you were delusional. I don't believe you. I can't. Nobody in their right mind would have these kind of experiences. When I would go to our church meetings and I would try to say different things, as an example, the one religion that we were going to believed that God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost are all together in one. And I kept saying, no, they're 3 separate bodies, but one in purpose. And so this created controversy. And so then this came into the marriage and different things happened. And finally she said, you know, I just can't take it. You tried to talk to me and I felt inside that I was like a volcano trying to explain to somebody or something, like a best friend or something. And I had to get something out and nobody wanted to listen to me and nobody wanted to believe me. And then I didn't know whether I was nuts or not. And I probably didn't act the best that I should have either. So then we separated. The interesting part is that every one of my 5 children that I had then, I'm now, as of today, a lot closer to them. And they accept me and they believe me and they support me in everything that I went through. My wife, she has apologized to me, both in writing, and she said I just could not handle it. Chose her avenue that she went through, and we're still separated, but we get along.
So she has sort of apologized at how difficult it would be for you to live under those circumstances. She was, in a polite way, saying that you were nuts and a liar, and you can't take that when you know the truth.
Well, it's hard. There's people here, and I'm not judging anybody, but there's people here that would say that he's making it up or this or that. The radio program I was on last night, people called in, and that's fine. I mean, they're entitled to their opinion, and I've had to grow with it. It's not an easy thing to live with. I've always had faith, but to know something beyond faith is, to me, is at a higher step to try to live to.
How many years ago did this experience occur?
Back in the 80s. So it's been a while back, and then I had this other thing there that wiped out part of my memory.
First of all, I would like to thank you for sharing your story, and it's just been an amazing story. My question is, do we have several lifetimes or just one?
It was led to me that we have one life, but sometimes we think we've lived before. We go to a place like Montana or like here in Salt Lake or whatever, and we believe we've been there, and you have been there because you lived in the pre-existence and you experienced things, or you saw mountains or you saw people or you saw things there in the pre-existence, that when you came down through what I call the veil of forgetfulness and you were born here, you don't remember. But sometimes that veil is lifted or it's thinner, or you get an intuition, or you believe, wait a minute, I've been here, I've done this, I know what's going to happen, or something. And it's the best that I can experience. But we have one life and only one life, and we're not reincarnated. But we did live in a pre-existence before and have experiences.
It's my pleasure to be in your presence, and I really appreciate your story. But you said something about when you first arrived in that realm or kingdom or whatever you want to call it, you saw people working on things like building and stuff like that. Did you get a sense of what you would be doing there?
No, I didn't. What I did get a sense of is that there was like these seats here. There was divisions within the kingdom or within heaven or whatever word you want to use, that each one of us were comfortable in whatever level that we were in. There was continued progression, if for better lack of words. It's like living here on earth. Some of us choose to get a doctor's degree. Some of us choose not even to graduate from high school. But whatever we choose, it's our free agency, and we're happy with whatever we've chosen. It doesn't mean that we can't continue on or can't go higher or can't have different experiences. We just choose not to. And that was the choice that, or the experience that I had there. There was other people that were striving on or wanted to have other experiences or were progressing, I guess, to a higher level, if you want to call it that. And there was other folks that were perfectly happy where they were at.
Did you find a chance to see alternate visions of the future, which is a common thing that people talk about?
Yeah, and this is what I was referring to here. And I talked to Arvin about it a great deal. One of the horrors that I went through is when this 9/11 happened. And I couldn't say to myself, well, why didn't I know that this was going to happen? I was no different than anybody else here. But when I saw it happening and I went through it, I realized then that I had actually seen this before it actually took place here. And a gut-down feeling, and I can't describe in detail to you, I have a gut-down feeling that there's something else that can or cannot happen. It doesn't mean it's set in cement. It doesn't mean it can't change. But I just know that there's other things that are going to happen in the future, and whatever they are, I don't know. But I believe there's going to be other things happen.
When we talked on the phone about the radio, you hinted to the fact that some spirits choose to go into evil circumstances. So the question is, why would a spirit choose to be like go down into a cannibalistic environment or maybe be born to a Satanist or something like that?
When we lived in the pre-existence, it's like this lady was asking. There were people there or spirits there that are not good spirits. They are evil spirits. But they understand one thing. And all of the spirits do understand one thing, that it's necessary to gain a body. Their whole purpose was to come to this life and to gain a body. And some of these people are like Charles Manson or other people that are hideous, that do hideous crimes, but they're more powerful than Satan. And I call it the devil, call it Satan, call it whatever, because he doesn't have a body. And spirits that are with him don't have a body. And your main goal in this life is to gain a body, and you have more power than people that haven't gained a body. And so when they came here, they achieved their goal of gaining the body, and then they do these hideous things, which is natural or unnatural, but it just is what it is. And there are evil people. I mean, there is good, and we have our free agency to choose to be good or and whatever you want to define that, or to be evil.
You had mentioned a child that was supposed to be yours that was coming to you. Could you share a little bit more about that? And could you share anything that you know about being able to see children that are not yet born there, maybe children still in a pre-existent state?
I almost made a joke out of it to my great-grandfather because I saw a child in the background that was supposed to come down through my quote-unquote lineage. And I just thought to myself that this was impossible. It couldn't happen. Well, my wife, we'd had five children, and she'd had her tubes tied, and it just was logical in my mind that weren't going to be any more children. As time progressed, we divorced, and then I was up in my mid-40s, and I met this other lady, and I'd been single for, I guess, 8 years or so. And she was 31, 32, and I had never been married. I know this sounds kind of dumb, but even when I got married to her, I never thought we were going to have any more kids. I don't know. And I was surprised when one day she said that she was pregnant. And I thought, and part of that is because of my horse accident. I had a very serious accident, and it just rendered me where sometimes right now I don't have feeling below the waist type of thing. But we have one child between us, and I'm very close to him, and I don't believe I recognized him there, but I do believe that he was the spirit that was to come to her and I. And it's a very emotional, very special thing. And so now I have a child that's 9 or 10 years old, and I have grandchildren, and my grandson is 5 months older than the nephew. And so it's kind of strange to go to school and meet the teachers, and my daughter's there with her kids meeting the same teachers type of thing.
Did you see other children that were not yet born there? Did they explain anything more about that?
I saw a lot of children that weren't born, but they weren't going to come to my lineage, but were waiting to come down. And they were coming to all walks of life. Some were going to be born to Christian families. Some were not going to be born. Some were coming to abusive families. Some were going to be, this sounds horrible, but knew they were going to be terminated, but they were going to gain a body. And that was their whole purpose. And for whatever reasons that they chose these conditions, I don't know why, it was their free agency to choose. But they were able to come down and get their main purpose, and all the spirits' main purpose is to gain a body.
Were you able to spend any time with your pets?
Yeah, and that's kind of emotional. I'm very close to all of my animals, and even though I am a cowboy or I have livestock and that type of thing, I still get very close to my horses and to my dogs, and very special to see them and to know that I would be back with them and to see them happy and that type of thing. But it also told me, just because they were animals or pets, I shouldn't abuse them. And I mean, that came very strongly. They're in my care here and I should take care of them.
Five of my own right now, so I understand. And you said that you could understand many different languages. So do you think that when you go back, you will be able to converse with your pets?
Not converse with them. At least I couldn't. It was the same as what we are here on this earth. But we'll have them forever and ever.
I arranged for John to come. I'm Sandy Cherry. And the reason why I asked to interrupt at this moment was, how many years ago was it that you came? Man. That you told your story to us, to me and Arvin?
How long has Arvin been gone?
How long has Arvin been gone, Martin?
10 years ago.
I think it's been 10 years. And the reason I'm interrupting is I want you to know that the first time that John ever told his story was to Arvin and I at Arvin's house. And if you've ever been in the presence of someone when they tell their near-death experience for the first time ever, it is probably one of the most sacred moments ever that you can imagine. And John was telling his story, and we could see that he was reliving every moment of it as he was speaking. And all of a sudden, he started to literally just sob. And he said, "Oh my gosh, my dog, he's there, he was there, he was there." And it was the first time that he had remembered that his sweet dog was there. And because I am such an animal lover, it just touched me tremendously. We all cried. It was just a beautiful moment to know that when an animal is loved, it will be for us, for there for us forever, right?
That's right.
I just had to come and tell you that.
And I'm going to tell you, all of you, when I met with Arvin and I met with Sandy, it was such a relief. It was like having a boil on your hand and the doctor finally lances it or it takes cancer away from you or something. I had to trust her and I had to trust Arvin, and I was scared to death, but I'm so glad that I made that contact with her and we remained friends for a long time. And I really appreciate being here with you folks as well.
You explained the importance of getting a body for all the different spirits, even all the whole range of spirits, and yet you explain also coming from being released from the body and how awful it was to come back in this restricted little corpse. Do you want to address that seeming contradiction that if it's such a big deal to get a body, why is it such a painful thing to be shoved into, so to speak?
Because, and I don't know how all of you feel, but I feel restricted. I can't do things, and the older I get, the more restricted I get. And like now, I have my father that's with me, and he's up in his late 80s. And he says the same thing all the time. Now he's more restricted to like a wheelchair or your eyes dim or whatever. And the older I get, the more I feel there's mountains I can't climb, there's just things that I can't do. And though it was important to be here and to gain a body, at the same time, I didn't want to be restricted. You want to eat a candy bar, but you don't want to gain weight. So, do you understand what I'm saying? It's a catch-22 situation. So I don't know how else to kind of explain it to you. It's very important because without your body, you can't experience the physical things or the things that we go through that they can't experience over there.
One of the miraculous things about your experience is how you came back and like it was told you, God would show his power and you would not be hurt. Could you address a little bit about that? You mentioned the melted tools. Were they like right beside your body and yet you had no singes on your hair?
I had always wondered as I grew up and I studied the Bible and I studied different things, how things could happen like parting of the Red Sea with Moses. And did this really happen? And just, I guess, natural with anybody else. And it was showed to me that God has power over all elements of all different kinds, and that it was going to be showed to me that he could control fire, he could control water, he could control whatever, and that I would be granted that my body wouldn't be harmed, and yet the physical elements would be harmed. And the fire was so hot that it melted the metal on the saws and the blades and burned the handles and that type of thing, and yet we were not hurt. Our helmets weren't melted. Any physical part with our body, our shirts and that type of thing, were not hurt. And we were able to walk up like this aisle, but once we got to the top of the hill, then everything came back into place. Then we could have been hurt or that type of, but we were safe on this mountaintop type of thing.
I was just wondering, as far as the purpose here, you were told about the other child, but there's so many years from when you were in your 20s. Do you still have a purpose, or is it just the day-to-day? I can see the frustration of you are always standing in line or you're waiting at red light, the frustration of that. So do you still wonder, do you have more purpose? Not that you are without purpose, but we all kind of wonder, why are we here? And because you kind of feel like, okay, I've learned it.
Let me relate this. I raised 5 children. And I was working all the time, and I wasn't with them, and my wife was raising them. She was a stay-at-home mom. And I didn't get to spend a lot of time with them. I did the best I could, but I was under time constraints. And this child here, now I'm retired, and I spend more time with him, and I enjoy him more, and I have more experiences, and he's teaching me more than what my other children did. Now that I'm gaining, or that I have grandchildren, I'm learning even more, and there's a lot more of deja vu, if you want to call it that. One of my daughters, as an example, got pregnant when she was 15. And now I'm looking at my granddaughters, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but it's interesting to step back and to see, now you're a parent, and now you know what I went through with you and how I tried to raise you, and the circle completes itself. With this child, as an example, anyone who's been a new mother or a new father, there's no book written or no blueprint as to how to raise your children. I came home and my wife was just going ballistic. And I asked her what was the matter. She said, well, he's been crying all day long, all day long. And I said, have you tried to give him Tylenol? Have you put your finger in his mouth? And he was teething. That was new for her. She'd never been through that, never thought about that or anything like that. And so many things now with him, even though he's different, it's easier this time around. I kind of know what to expect and kind of know what's coming down, except I don't think you ever, in answer to you, I don't think you ever quit learning. We came down, and I know this sounds weird, but I came over Soldier Summit. And came there at nighttime, and all of a sudden, here's all of this construction going on, and all I could think of was going north. And then that was a learning experience. And every day I get up and I come here to a meeting like this, or I'm working with my livestock, or I'm with my grandkids or whatever, I never quit learning. I'm on the computer and I learn different things with the internet. In my life just keeps going, and I keep thinking and keep moving ahead, and I can't imagine myself of ever just shutting down and not ever quit learning. And when you die, you don't quit learning there either. It's just a carryover. And I'm going to tell you all right here, the veil is very, very thin. There's relatives and there's spirits of each and every one of you here, and they're with you, and you can't see them. But I don't know if you've ever felt like a wind, or like had a premonition, or you get the creepies on your skin or something, and you just feel like somebody's there, but you can't see them. And they are here, and they do see you, and they still do love you. It's just that we can't see them.
I want to ask you one quick question. I know people are burned, and they lose their body, and that's it. But what about people that go ahead and get cremated? Did you see any people that do that?
I didn't see anybody that was cremated. I really can't answer that because I don't like to give my personal opinion. I just like to say what I saw and what I know. My personal opinion is that doesn't really make much of a difference.
A lot of bodies are just burned up, you know, anyway.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I know that even if you're in a serious wreck, or your body is cut up or something like that, when you're resurrected, it's all going to be put back together again, and you're going to have a perfect body.
Did you have a sacred experience with your Savior?
I never saw Christ. I never saw God. I never saw the Holy Spirit. But I really felt like, or it was passed to me, that it was important to know that there's three different entities and separate entities like all of us here, but one in purpose. And that there was a plan that this earth, it wasn't just happenstance that we're here at this time, or that it was created in such a way, that there was a plan behind it, and that we're here at this particular time because of whatever reasons that we're here for. Some of us didn't want to be born in the pioneer days. Some of us didn't want to use an outhouse. We wanted to have more modern conveniences and computers and that type of thing. And it wasn't circumstance or just a flip of the coin that you're here at this time. You're here because you chose to be here and to have these experiences, whereas they chose to be here at the time that they were here to have the experiences that were necessary for them. Columbus was here for whatever reasons, because he founded America, and that was his time. Our founding fathers are the same way. America wasn't just created. I mean, if you understand what I'm trying to explain to you, it's not a circumstance that people can create a cell phone or right now or whatever. It's the right time, the right place.
You'd mentioned that people would know where their bodies were placed when they died. Was there anything to be understood as why?
I don't know how to answer that. I do know that I saw lots of people attending their own funerals. And they were above their caskets, and they were watching people, and they were feeling sad because of the sadness that their loved ones here on earth were going through, and that it was important for them to go to the last resting place and to know where their body was. This time around, I've come out of my shell a little bit, and I do have an email address, and I don't mind in sharing that with people. And if you have questions, I promise you as much as I can, I will email you back.
JakeYoung75@yahoo.com. JakeYoung, number 75, at yahoo.com.
And I'm not a preacher, I'm not a prophet or anything like that at all. I'm just an ordinary person like you folks. But if there's any way that I can help anybody, feel free to ask me anything or whatever. Thank you.